Word of mouth.
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 Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. It was the high school commencement address heard round the world.
You're not special. You're not exceptional. Contrary to what your U9 soccer trophy suggests, your glowing seventh grade report card, despite every assurance of a certain corpulent purple dinosaur, that nice Mr. Rogers, and your batty Aunt Sylvia, no matter how often your paternal caped crusader has swooped in to save you, you are nothing special.
English teacher David McCullough Jr. there, addressing the 2012 graduates from the public high school in Wellesley, Massachusetts. A video of that speech went hyper-viral, and within days, he was on TV and radio from Berlin to Beijing. It was discussed by pundits and from pulpits. People stopped him on the street to praise him. A few encouraged him to run for office. Suddenly, he writes, I was the you-are-not-special guy. David McCullough Jr. expands on that fateful speech in a new book called You Are Not Special and Other Encouragements. With a wry, affectionate eye, he addresses the role that parents and communities and educators play in the drive to excel. Now, as we're discussing the State of Higher Education series this week on NHPR's A Matter of Degrees, we look to the college students of tomorrow, that coddled generation of kids, micromanaged by their parents and raised to believe that they are exceptional. David McCullough Jr., welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
When you delivered that speech, you had 26 years of teaching then under your belt, first in Hawaii and then in Wellesley. When did you begin to observe parents becoming, as you put it, the CFOs, strategic planners, marketing directors, and chauffeurs to their kids?
I started to see a little bit in the later years in Hawaii and then quite overwhelmingly in Wellesley, where I teach, and in Sudbury, where I live. It's a different culture with different expectations, and well-meaning parents are quite involved in every aspect of their children's lives.
Well-meaning parents, you're a parent yourself, you have four kids, and you write about this overwhelming urge to secure or to aid in their safety and happiness. But you also write about the deeper meaning of the helicopter phenomenon. What do you think parents are working out here?
I think all of us are struggling to define what is best for our child and what our role in achieving that might be. To what degree do you allow your child self-determination, come what may? And to what degree do you stride along with them and make sure outcomes work out the way they should? It's a difficult balance to strike.
The idea that we hear from you in the speech and in the book is that kids need the latitude to screw up. But given such high stakes, and especially our conventional ideas about, success is assured if you get into the right school, why not actively steer kids whose judgment and whose neurological makeup is still unformed?
For that very reason. They were denying them the experience to navigate, negotiate life on their own. And in school, the stakes should be low, not so high that parents need to intercede all the time. School is the ideal place where a kid can encounter struggle. Kids need to fail. They just shouldn't think themselves failures for having done so. And if parents deny kids wobbles, they're denying them the experience of dealing with wobbles, of picking themselves up off the ground after something doesn't quite go their way.
How do you think the opposite of that manifests for kids? We have a very me-centered generation, believing that success is a mandate for them. How does that affect the way that they think about themselves and the world?
Well, because so much has been dedicated to their success, they think being self-involved is being responsible. They don't think of themselves as narcissistic or solipsistic or self-involved. They think they're just being normal because this is the way people behave. They're in constant communication with one another all the time. To me, the selfie is a lovely metaphor for our era. From the parenting point of view, I think the perfect metaphor for our era is the car seat. Kids are protected, they're driven, and they're aimed in one direction. But their perspective is limited, their freedom is inhibited. Yes, they're safe, absolutely. But, they're looking at the back of the seat in front, they can hardly see out the window. And that denies them, in my view, very important formative experiences.
David McCullough Jr. is with us. He's out with a new book called You're Not Special and Other Encouragements, which addresses, among other things, the cult of exceptionalism, with teenagers ever more preoccupied with success and ever more frightened of taking risks. So what you're talking about, David, throughout this book, you know, you address parents, you address teachers, you address students themselves, is taking down or disrupting, as the language is now in education and business, a whole system overloaded based on cutthroat competition. How do you do that? How do you take down this whole system?
You know, it's a statistical inevitability that most of us are average. The problem is success entails being above average. So how do you accomplish that then? Well, you inflate grades, and so upward grades creep. It's an inflated economy from every angle. It's also an arms race. Kids are competing for admission to what they'll call, quote, good colleges, which is code for prestigious colleges. And they know that's accomplished with terrific grades. And terrific grades are achieved by choosing courses in which you know you're likeliest to succeed, which from the educator's point of view is less than ideal.
Well, this is something that you mentioned noticing in Sudbury, where you live, and the town of Wellesley, associated, I think, in many of our minds with wealth and exclusivity. I mean, these kids, we think, are born on third base. So how do you encourage them to think independently? Tell us about some of the tactics that you use in class and other ways to address that idea of daring to take a risk.
I try to give them experiences at which they will not succeed. I give them sometimes very difficult assignments that they're going to do poorly on. And I try to show them, look, it's okay not to do well. Sometimes when I give pop quizzes, I will tell them, if you did well, don't gloat. If you did poorly, don't despair. I think that's important. I need, as a parent and as a teacher, to disabuse the notion that school is about grades. It's not. It's about education.
Do you advise some of these kids to, you know, forget spending $54,000 on college, go to the library for 4 years, rebuild a 68 Mustang, you know, go to Port-au-Prince and work in a clinic? Now, ironically, these are exactly the kind of verifiable hours of dedicated altruism or experience that admissions officers are looking for on college admissions.
I don't envy college admissions officers. They have a very, very difficult job to perform. Kids have the notion that if they attain a certain GPA and a certain SAT score, and they have an impressive enough resume, they should, by all rights, get into any college they want. What they don't understand is that college admissions officers are building a mosaic, which is as it should be. They want fully dimensional, invested, interesting people who are going to thrive on their particular campus. In my view, high school should not be about getting ready for college. High school should be about igniting interests and rewarding enthusiasm and learning a beneficial skill set and having fun growing.
We meet a number of kids in your book. One of them is Max. He's a bagger at a local grocery store. Now, he's one of these kids kind of caught in the middle. He's slightly embarrassed that he's working as at the grocery store. But he tells you that his parents make too much money for him to get much financial aid and not enough to comfortably send him. It was shocking to read that a lot of these kids perceive underprivilege, you know, the lack of expectations, as having freedom. Where does the middle class fit into this?
Yes, kids who come from a family with means enough to send them to college, but not enough to pay for it comfortably, and have too much to qualify for financial aid, are in a very difficult spot. College is hugely expensive, as of course you know.
So what is at stake here, David McCullough Jr., if we don't put the brakes on this arms race for heading in one direction, you know, the track of success, the attention of the college admissions officers, the conspicuous achievement? What happens if we don't stop this?
The danger is that we're going to create underprepared, needy, fragile people who will be of little benefit to the rest of us. Education is about the students' growth, of course. but it's also about how the rest of us will benefit from the good work of the educated person. And so it matters to all of us what's happening. It should matter to all of us.
Well, David McCullough, much more than the You're Not Special guy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. You're kind. Thank you.
David McCullough Jr., public high school teacher, whose 2012 commencement address was viewed and debated the world over. His new book is called You Are Not Special and Other Encouragements. You can learn a lot more about the book and watch the speech at wordofmouthradio.org. Word of Mouth is staying on the education beat, this time with a story that takes us outside the classroom and into hackerspace, tinkering as a teaching tool. That's after the break. This is Word of Mouth.